powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Well, we're going to try to make this a really fun show, although as a heads up for you guys, Jake and Stacy is just 1 hour to get today because the Mariners-White Sox series finale is a matinee. Pregame starts at noon, first pitch at 1:10 p.m., so we've got 1 hour here with you guys, but we're going to make the most of it. We've got Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest joining us at 11:30. I have plenty of questions for him about Carlos Dunlap's press conference from yesterday. And before we ask Joe about any of it, Jake, I want to make sure that you and you guys, the listeners, know exactly what we're talking about. If you missed it, there are two things, Jake, two things I think that fans should be really excited about following Carlos Dunlap's press conference. And normally player press conferences, especially in the offseason, and in particular in kind of like these Zoom press conferences where you stumble across them on YouTube or whatever, they kind of go under the radar unless something big is said. I think something big was said, though. So I'll start with the first one, the slightly less newsworthy one, but still very important. First thing Seahawks fans should be excited for, Carlos Dunlap gave an endorsement of this team in his press conference, and there's also plenty of excitement about what the pass rush can look like. Cut three, here's what Carlos said.
Yeah, I look forward to, I came back because of the culture, the transparency with the organization. And I believe that, our season was cut short. And I said cut short because I feel like we had full ability and capabilities of going much further than we did. But it was cut short because we didn't perform. I feel like, I welcome the challenge of, starting from day one, game one, and trying to get back to where we were and going further.
And I also want to go to cut number two here, Curtis, and Carlos Dunlap continues to keep furthering on along that same sentiment of, look, he wants to come back and build on what they did last year.
You know, with such a small sample of games I got opportunity to play in, and you're able to see what we were able to do and accomplish, I feel like if we can get that from the day one with off-season program and being in the OTAs and being in the meeting, learning the culture, I just feel like sky's the limit because I feel like we were – able to accomplish some great things last season in such a short period of time. I just want to build on that.
So this is an endorsement from Carlos Dunlap saying, hey, I wanted to come back to Seattle. I wanted to be here in Seattle the entire time. And it was genuine, not just because of the experience that I had here with this top-notch organization and the fact that the organization, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, everybody was super transparent with me in their thought process of how they wanted me here in Seattle. They had to make business decisions, and they were straight up from the jump. But I believe, Carlos Dunlap stated, I believe that this team, without a doubt, is a Super Bowl contender. And I believe that we underachieved last year, and I want to come back because we have unfinished business. We have more to accomplish with this team, and I'm excited to be able to do that from the beginning, not in the midway point of the year. That, to me, if you're a Seahawks fan, that should get you excited. That should get you fired up that somebody like Carlos Dunlap, who was wanted by other teams, by the way, and there was a market for Carlos Dunlap, decided to come back to Seattle, always wanted to come back to Seattle with that at the forefront of his mind. Not just how it was comfortable and how he liked the organization, but the fact that he believes that this team has a lot on the table in terms of their ability to go compete.
Let's talk about what they have on the table this year. Now, before I get to that second point that Carlos Dunlap said, the sticky one that everyone's focused on, before I get to that, let's look at specifically the pass rush because, Jake, one of the things that this team has been dealing with basically every offseason since they traded Frank Clark ahead of the 2019 draft is what do we do with the pass rush? That's a question they've been asking themselves. And in some years, they've fallen flat. Look at when they brought in Clowney and Ansah. Everyone was excited about what they could look like. They end up getting something like 28 sacks, a really low number, bottom third of the league, well into the bottom third of the league. That was one approach. They ended up taking a totally different approach by trading to acquire Jamal Adams and then trading midseason to acquire Carlos Dunlap. that ended up working really well. They bounced back up in the second half of the season. They were, I think, first or second in the league in sacks and finished the year seventh overall in sacks. It's a monumental step forward. But there were still some question marks because some of the guys that were the biggest contributors, like Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa, weren't re-signed for quite a while, for like several weeks, in fact. Finally, he comes back. Not only does Dunlap come back, Benson Mayoa, who had six sacks, comes back. Kerry Hyder, who performed well for the 49ers in place of Bosa, signs here. How are you feeling in general about the pass rush? Is this finally a question that's been answered?
I believe at this stage it has been answered, and there's also more reason for optimism because you have the younger players like L.J. Collier, Alton Robinson, who played really, really well. Robinson with four sacks, second most sacks out of any rookie in the NFL last year. Then you add Daryl Taylor, which is the ultimate wild card, and he comes in and he's healthy and he's playing at the level that this organization believes that he can basically be a Frank Clark 2.0. Then I have to be very excited about where this pass rush currently stands. And the fact that they are heading into the year without it being a question mark, that they can start from day one with that being a positive, that is a huge difference to this defense over the past couple of years. But Stacey, you mark some of the moves that they had to make to get themselves that point. That's also why we sit here heading into a month away from the draft and they only have three draft picks. Right? Because they had to go and acquire these players to contribute to the club. Not the fact that they were homegrown or they got them on the free agent market. They traded a lot of capital to get these players, and it has to pay off for them. I'm all fine with this situation because I feel like the team itself is in good position to continue to keep competing at the highest level, but you got to make it count. You can't put yourselves in these situations and not capitalize or perform to expectations when you're putting yourself in this situation. And for John Schneider and crew, this is the first time you've ever had only three draft picks. So we'll see how it plays out. But I'm excited about the pass rush, Stacey. I'm excited about Carlos Dunlap's outlook on this team. And I have to be very optimistic about what this defense can ultimately be, knowing that they're not done adding to this roster. They are going to continue to keep adding to this roster, and I think that they have enough cap space where you're going to see maybe two to three more potential adds out there in the free agent market.
You are listening to Jake and Stacey this hour, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis Rogers is here on the board. Now, let's get to that second point. This is the sticking point for me. So in addition to talking about being excited to be back, why he came back, holding out hope that Seattle would reach back out, all of that's awesome to hear, especially for Seahawks fans. He was also asked, unsurprisingly, about the biggest story for the Seahawks for this offseason and one of the biggest stories in the NFL this offseason, and that is Russell Wilson, the discontent that he kind of made clear in February. Now, here's what Dunlap had to say, cut one.
I did ask him if obviously he was going to be with us, because if I'm coming back, I'm coming back because I see him as my quarterback and the rest of the team. I want to pick up where we left off. And he told me that he's with us and he's here to stay. And he said, you know, let's go Hawks. And I'm not going to quote his every word, or these words are not his words verbatim, but these are my explanation of how I interpreted what he said.
That's Carlos Dunlap essentially saying, look, I talked to Russell Wilson before I came here. Sounds like he's here to stay. And if I'm Carlos Dunlap and I have a couple options of where I want to sign, and I know that at 32 years old, I might only have another really productive year or two, I want to know that the place I'm going to is going to have the quarterback situation locked down. It's the most important position. I want to know that you're staying there. And if I'm Carlos Dunlap, I'm turning to Russell Wilson and I'm going to say, hey, business is business. Understand if you're going to leave. If you're leaving, don't lie to me. I don't want to waste my time.
Right. And I think you have a very genuine and honest moment between two players, between two veterans, right? And Russell Wilson giving him an honest answer. I love the idea of Carlos Dunlap saying, I'm taking this into my own interpretation, my own words. I'm not going to say exactly what Russ said, but, you know, Russ saying something to the effect of like, hey, Carlos, I'm staying, you know, let's go win this thing, whatever. And then Carlos Dunlap putting that in his own Google translation of Russell Wilson, and it means go Hawks. Like, I would love if that was the case. But I think that that's a huge piece of news that Carlos Dunlap obviously gives us, because we've had very little insight into what has been going on, what is the conversations, what is the thought process of both the organization and Russell Wilson and his camp and everything that's going on since really the four teams were listed, you know, and put out there by Russell Wilson and his camp that, hey, we don't want to be traded, but if the team is thinking about trading me, then here's the four teams that I would even consider. My immediate reaction is it puts to bed any question of Russell Wilson being traded this year, that Adam Schefter can take that report and can take that, you know, skepticism about Russ's future here before the draft, and he can just shove that and throw it away. I don't want to hear another word about it. It also sets the stage for the relationship to be mended. And I know, and I'm telling you that this relationship has been worked on and has been in the works, you know, for a little bit now in terms of this relationship being mended and working in the positive direction. But when I really sit and think about it, with everything that's happened in terms of the public fight, in terms of the public drama that's played out in front of our eyes between the Seahawks and Wilson, I will always say TBD on Russ's future here in Seattle. To be determined. There's all sorts of different factors that can come into place. You never know, right? But if I'm a betting man, and I'm betting confidently, I'd say he finishes out his current contract here in Seattle without question, and with a great opportunity that he finishes out his entire career here in Seattle. That's what I would be betting, and betting with confidence. But and the reason why I say that is because at some point, when you get into a fight, when you get into an argument with friends, family, spouse, whatever the case may be, at some point, you have to come back to your senses. There's been a friction point. There's something you've made arguments. You may have said some things you don't mean along the way. I'm not exactly painting the same exact picture between the Seahawks and Russell Wilson here, but I'm just, you know, giving you an illustration. At some point, you got to come back together and you got to say, hey, I'm sorry for this. I'm sorry for that. And work it out and try and figure this out and understand that you're better together. Understand that your relationship means a great deal to you. And I think with the Seahawks and with Russell Wilson, both parties benefit from staying with one another. Pete Carroll, I've said from the beginning, has zero, absolutely zero interest in starting over from scratch. And by now, if the Seahawks have even flirted around with the idea of potentially trading Russell Wilson, and as Adam Schefter has put out there many, many of times, is if the Seahawks were to get an opportunity to get enough draft capital and an obvious replacement for Russell Wilson all in the same deal, they would make that trade. Well, I would love the perfect trade for my organization too. That would never happen to where Russ would be happy with where he's going, the Seahawks getting exactly what they want in return. They went through that process. They fielded the calls. They got the offers. They knew exactly what was out there being offered to them. And there also comes this realization of, hey, this really
isn't, we
didn't like any of it, and this isn't even an option for us. Like, we have to make this work, and we have to make this relationship work, because we will be at our best over the next few years with Russell Wilson as our quarterback, and no question about that. And so I really do think that this puts to bed any questions about Russell's future here as a Seattle Seahawk.
As a reminder, we are going to have Joe Fan joining us in about 15 minutes to get back to this conversation. Also, we do have a one-hour show today, but we're bringing the energy because, Curtis, you and you, Jake, have been having nothing but Capri Sun and Cinnamon Toast Crunch for breakfast for 2 days.
We're hyped up. We're jacked up.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. It's nothing but sugar. You are just running on pure sugar. Shout out to a listener.
Adrenaline.
Adam, who sent us that.
Who sent us in.
Thank you, Adam.
We appreciate it, and guess what? We have been practicing. Curtis is going to take another shot at it.
Are you sub 17 seconds on your Capri Sun chugging yet?
We're getting there.
You're getting there. It's all in the straw. Okay, that makes sense. All right, it is 11:15. That means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Question number one, through five games, what is your biggest Mariners overreaction?
Biggest Mariners overreaction.
Maybe something like, this is Yusei Kikuchi's year. I want to believe it, and he had great stuff in his first outing. but it's way too early to just decide, like, all right, he's fixed whatever issues he had that were recurring issues and tinkering with things, and this is it. This is his year. This is the year he looks. I think probably overexcitement about pitching. I did the same thing with Chris Flexen, where I was like, Stacy, calm down. This is everyone's first outing. This is not indicative of how they're going to be this year, but it's early in the season. I'm excited about it.
If I'm going to be honest with myself.
Be honest.
About my overreaction.
And it can be negative, too. It can be something's better.
I'm not going to go overboard.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, Christian. I know this is going to make you mad.
Oh,
you know,
no.
one of our clear P1s. But Evan White at the plate has been a disaster. Like, I don't know what to say about it. And
I think he's hitting 143.
I am really hoping that it can quickly get turned around. But you saw him go up against really good quality pitching the last two games. Hasn't been pretty. Hasn't been pretty whatsoever. And that's one thing that I was really, really hoping to see changed at this point.
Curtis, what is yours?
My biggest overreaction right now to this Mariners team is that Mitch Haniger is going to be an all-star. That's my biggest overreaction right now.
You better put Ty France there, too, because that guy is hitting.
Maybe there's two all-stars. But, yeah, that Evan White take you've got there, Jake, very real right now. He looked so overmatched the last two nights. But, hey, good news. He's batting cleanup today.
he just looks like right now all he's thinking about is just trying to kill the ball. Let's just make some contact. Like, he is swinging so unbelievably hard. And
if you think this is the last time Jake will be upset about this, you're
so
wrong.
Talented.
I've got some lineup changes
he's
to
so
tell you about.
He's so unbelievably talented.
All right.
And then putting him in cleanup, I don't know if that's the best spot for him. But, hey, let's ride it out. Let's see how this goes. Let's go. Come on. Come on, Evan White.
Question two.
Number two.
We heard from Carlos Dunlap yesterday in his, I guess, reintroductory press conference. So who will lead the Seahawks in sacks next season?
I believe that Carlos Dunlap is going to lead the team in sacks next season.
Ooh.
I really do. I think that when you put him in consistent one-on-one situations, which I think he's going to find himself in more often than not, I think that for a full season, he is going to be your leading sack getter. Now, here's the reason why. Because he's consistently gotten 8 sacks plus every year. I mean, he hasn't had one of those years where he's had monster numbers where he's gotten up to like 15 sacks. But you can almost put it in the bank with his work, his body of work, his consistency year in and year out that he is an 8-plus sack guy. And I think that Carlos Dunlap is going to do that yet again with a full season as your leading pass rusher.
I think so too, especially with Kerry Hyder being at like a 5-tech spot and LJ Collier presumably spending some more time inside. I could definitely see it being Dunlap. I will tell you this. I think there's some safe money to bet on Jamal Adams for this kind of stat.
I was going
to
say.
But I promise you every single defensive lineman on this team is thinking, all respect to Jamal Adams, great dude. It better be a defensive lineman leading the team in sacks this year.
Number three.
In honor of Stacy, question three.
Wow.
What is your worst food take?
Okay. I don't have food takes. A summary.
You should have said like 10
Stacy's.
How do you pick if you're Stacy?
A summary of the food takes you guys have hated on that aren't even that bad. Number one, spaghetti's overrated. I didn't say it was bad.
That's
I said it was overrated.
Bad food take.
There are like 20 better pasta combinations. Mm. Number two, sherbet is gross. It's disgusting. Rainbow sherbet, especially.
Once again, tread lightly, Stacy.
Number three, baked beans on hot dogs. It's pretty good.
No,
you should try
that's
it.
That's wild.
I don't even have anything in my stomach, and I'm still trying to keep it down. I would say for me, probably my worst food take is because I realized I was terribly, terribly wrong, and I don't know how I went so long with this take, but that salsa isn't good.
Are you sure you didn't come around on that?
No, I'm saying that salsa. I said for a long time that salsa wasn't good.
I remember
and
this.
And then I actually had some good salsa, and now I like it. So I called myself out on a bad food take because of my unwillingness to continue to keep trying. I had one bad taste of salsa when I was younger, and never came back to it.
Is my guy Jake eating, like, Pace picante sauce?
Yeah,
like,
I'm wondering. First of all, I would
have queso.
Pace picante salsa.
I would always have queso, just not salsa.
Okay.
I mean, queso's pretty dang good.
I don't think baked beans on a
queso
hot dog
is better
worse
than salsa.
Than disliking salsa. Curtis, what's
yours?
Here's
mine. Okay.
No,
so
trust me, it's worse.
A few years ago, a couple of my buddies, they love Mountain Dew and, like, all flavors of Mountain Dew.
Ugh.
This is around, like, the holiday time. So we had some
Curtis,
eggnog laying around.
Are you talking about me right now?
No. Okay. We had some eggnog laying around.
I don't like where this is going.
And you know how sometimes people put, like, Sprite in their eggnog to kind of cut it?
Yeah.
We were taste testing Mountain Dew and eggnog together. The best way to drink eggnog is with Mountain Dew Voltage, the purple kind.
Oh, my God. It's like Christmas at a frat house.
Yeah. Mountain Dew Voltage and eggnog, not bad. Don't knock it till you try it.
Curtis, here's I will knock it right now.
Curtis, Stacey's like freaking out, like going to fall on the floor here. She's so upset.
That's disgusting.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That, like, sounds really, really good.
It's really good.
I'm sorry, but none of my food takes have been worse than either of those.
No.
This is
I think yours
absurd.
Have been plenty worse.
Yeah. I mean, here from the 425, Stacey, you're cray-cray. Sherbet? What's wrong with you? It's amazing.
I just said that there are... Here's the thing. It's Jake's favorite. There are 27 flavors of ice cream that are better than rainbow sherbet. Plain vanilla is better than rainbow sherbet. Sherbet, whatever.
Stacey, we're coming up on the clock. I don't really have... We don't have time to go over this ridiculous comment.
You know what? I want to know what Joe Fan's worst food take is. We'll make sure to ask him, too, in addition to asking him about the latest developments with Carlos Dunlap and the Seahawks. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, joining us right now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. This 11:30 segment brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Joe, first of all, I texted you to give you warning, but you only had like a minute to figure it out, so hopefully you're ready. Jake, Curtis, and I were just talking about our worst food takes. It is allegedly inspired by me, even though I don't have bad food takes. I have great food takes. These two just don't have developed palates. So, Joe, I need to know what your worst food opinion is.
Well, I get a lot of heat for saying I don't like seafood, like, at all.
That's
fair. I don't like the smell of it, don't like the taste of it, don't like the texture of it.
Awful take.
I'm out on all seafood, and that normally gets me in a lot of trouble.
Everything?
Fun fact, I actually had someone, I once went on a date, this is a fun fact, peeling back the curtain here, that the girl said, I don't know, she was making this up, we're just trying to be nice, or using whatever, but she said, I am not going to be able to get past you not liking seafood, so we can't go out again. And I said, wow, I appreciate your candor. But that's a first for me. I've never heard that before. Been rejected in a lot of ways, but never because of my food preferences. My real one, though, the one I'll die on this hill is that Thanksgiving dinner is vastly overrated.
Oh, my gosh.
That's somewhat
Curtis, can you dump
somewhat
this call
fair.
Right now?
No, oh, keep Joe. Joe, because here's the thing. The only things good about Thanksgiving are stuffing, turkey, potatoes, gravy, bread. Like, you just do a cycle of that, but it's not like the best meal ever. Jake's so upset. Jake, jump into the actual questions because you're
all just right, before my head explodes right now. Joe, we got some interesting insight in, you know, Carlos Dunlap re-signing. You guys media had a chance to talk to him yesterday. What were your overall impressions from what he had to say?
I love chatting with Carlos, and ever since he came to the Seahawks in that midseason trade last year, I mean, he is one of, if not the most candid player in that locker room, and he's usually telling you just as it is. And you know, obviously, that the big storyline is what he said about Russ. And speaking with Russ before he signed, saying, "Hey, if I'm going to sign this contract, I'm signing it with you know, the idea of you being our quarterback," and so wanting that assurance, I think, was nice for fans to hear, but also it makes sense. And that's, I think, what a lot of us wondered is this saga with Russell Wilson going to bleed into, you know, how different players might see Seattle as a viable option in free agency? And so, you know, it's no surprise to hear that Carlos looked for that assurance, but I think it, you know, it was nice just to, he was refreshing to hear of, like, yeah, it wasn't just about, all right, you know, it's obviously the money's important and this, and you want culture, you want that, but like, you want to win. And when you know what's been in the news and the headlines over the last 2 months, okay, I'm going to find out for myself and make sure, hey, I don't care about what I've read, I don't care about what's happened. Are you going to be here? Yes, I am. So that was really cool. And I'm just really happy for him because it was just so evident how much he enjoyed being in Seattle, how much he enjoyed his time, that eight games plus the wild card round last year. And, you know, now he gets to come back and get after some unfinished business, as he put it.
Now, it feels, you know, to me, and I think to many other people, like the Seahawks, for the first time in a while, have the question answered at the pass rush before they head into the off season. But I can't tell if this is just me falling into the exact same trap I've fallen into every offseason, which is thinking like, oh, great, they got it figured out. This is going to be a great group. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. So when you're looking overall at the group as it is right now, where are you feeling about their ceiling, their potential as a pass rush unit?
I'm not sure how far back you want to go. I mean, with 2014, maybe. I mean, this is their best defensive line collectively, and not just depth. I mean, remember last year, they were kind of going for this sum of the parts approach, and depth is important. Having good rotational pieces is huge. But you need a dude, and Carlos Dunlap showed that he was that dude in terms of being the catalyst for the turnaround, for the pass rush, in tandem with Jamal Adams getting healthy, in terms of making others around him better. I mean, you saw Benson Mayoa, Jaron Reed, Puna Ford, LJ Collier, all those guys had a jump in production once he was there. And so you have to have that one guy who, one, can have that clutch factor. He had two game ceiling sacks, one against Arizona and one against Washington. But the other part of that is that, you know, the attention he commands allows others to be freed up a bit. And you saw the benefits of that last year. And I think now that that piece is in place, fans can feel really excited about Benson Mayoa coming back. They can feel really excited about Kerry Hyder joining the club, who had a really nice year last year, career high 8.5 sacks for the Niners. And then also now the best maybe part about it is you're not banking on Daryl Taylor, who hasn't played a snap, to come in and be a week one contributor. And so whatever you get from him is just icing on the cake at this point, because you've got the pieces around him to where the Seahawks should have a productive pass rush regardless of what they get from their second round pick a year ago.
Now, Joe, it has led to some people feel like, hey, this defense is in a better position than they were a year ago. Is that truly the case in your mind? And what other moves do you feel like they have to make in order to make this defense truly better than what it was last year?
I'm really curious how much faith they have in Cody Barton. That, to me, is a big question mark. They spent a third-round pick on him. You know, are they going to invest in bringing KJ Wright back? I think it's possible. Especially the fact that he isn't signed, you know, you might get him far more affordable than they thought he would be. And, you know, quite frankly, KJ Wright thought he would be as well. But like theoretically, they should have that spot filled. Cody Barton should be able to do that as a third round pick going into year three. He's got some playing time under his belt. But between that spot and then I do think they need another corner. And I know you tweeted out some veteran names that are still out there, I think would be wise of them to bring in. I think banking on just the three they have is, especially with the injuries, you look at the injuries they suffered last year, you need depth at corner, especially when guys like Trey Flowers and Akella Witherspoon, neither of those guys have shown that they can be your dependable, they are your starting guy. You don't consider, you know, you don't even worry about what the starting lineup is. It's DJ Reed on one side, it's Trey Flowers and Akella Witherspoon on the other side. I mean, those two are going to battle it out, much like Quentin Dunbar and Trey Flowers battled it out during training camp last year. But you do need some more pieces there. It couldn't hurt to have another veteran in the group, even one that's, you know, going to have to compete for a starting job, isn't necessarily starting out, you know, out of the gate. But then it's a young group. DJ Reed, Akella Witherspoon, Trey Flowers, young group. So having another veteran presence there, I think, would be big. But overall, I think, again, the Seahawks have done as much as fans could have hoped, particularly, again, on that defensive line, to feel pretty good about their offseason so far.
Now, the Seahawks are only going to have three draft picks this year. I don't think any of us actually expect them to stick with three. Before we find out who those guys are, though, we do at least know who heading in from the 2020 draft has a chance to make a bigger impact in his second season. When you look at these guys, is there any one particular player from this group where you think pressure's on this guy or this guy's got to have a great year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Damian Lewis is one. I think Damian Lewis is probably biggest one because he is your starter wherever they put him. They decide to move him to center, be a right guard, he's starting. And so he needs to take a step forward in his pass protection, but had a tremendous rookie year. And then I think you look at some of the other pieces and Alton Robinson, you know, again, he has a lot of depth in the defensive line, but he had a really promising rookie year. I can't wait to see what Cody Parkinson's all about. You know, I think 6'7" tight end, I'd like to see what the guy's capable of. That's just not a common body type you find in the NFL. And so he's a guy I'm really eager to see, even though he's not going to have a ton of pressure per se. I know that's how you posed the question behind Gerald Everett and Will Disley. And I do think the pressure is still on Daryl Taylor. I mean, he was the guy they traded up for. He was the guy they considered taking in the first round. He was the guy they coveted at that spot, you know, to trade up and get him in the second round. And, you know, he said he was healthy as a horse. No one from John Schneider to Pete Carroll spoke during the draft about him potentially missing an entire year. So things did not go as planned. And the fact that they were able to get their hands on him, do an in-house medical, and give the green light to that pick, there's a tremendous amount of organizational pressure, not just on the kid, the player, but also on the team for him to be a guy for you that can contribute for a long time.
He is Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. Always a pleasure talking to you, Joe, and we promise we won't hold your awful food takes against you, mostly because barbs have been being thrown at my food takes all day, so I empathize,
I can't
Joe.
Promise the same thing.
Okay, that's fine. Hey, well, you have one fan.
Thanksgiving the holiday, incredible holiday. Football, family, I love it.
Got it.
And the food.
Thanksgiving the dinner.
And look, the
I
food.
I think Jake will get over this, but I don't know how long it'll take. Joe, thank you so much. It was fun talking to you today. Have a good one.
Great stuff, Joe.
All right. Do you think you have what it takes to pick the winner for this year's Masters? Well, head to 710sports.com/win. Guess the champion and their winning score, and you could end up winning the ultimate premier golfing pass. That's a round of golf for you and three friends at 10 premier golf courses. Details, again, at 710sports.com/win. All right, you guys. James Paxton and Jake Fraley have been placed on the 10-day IL. So what's it mean for the Mariners this week? And what is Jake, our Jake, want to see with this lineup? That's next as we close out a short show and take you guys to the M series finale against the White Sox.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. A couple Mariners roster moves. Braden Bishop was recalled from the alternate training site in addition to LJ Newsome. Meanwhile, Jake Fraley and James Paxton, both of whom were injured in yesterday's game, have been placed on the 10-day IL. Fraley with a left hamstring strain and Paxton with a left forearm strain. So if there is any good news-ish, it's that it's the 10-day IL and so far not anything that would like end his season. Obviously more news to come from his MRI results today, but Paxton did tell reporters after that game, from which he was pulled after 24 pitches, that he was experiencing more elbow discomfort than elbow pain, and that the pain that he was feeling wasn't as severe as it was with his very similar injury with New York. So there is a plus side there. So those are your latest roster updates, your latest pitching updates. Any quick reaction to that before we jump into this lineup question you have?
Yeah, 24 pitches.
Okay.
24 pitches is all it's took. I mean, it just is really unfortunate. It's really sad for someone like Paxton, who everybody loves, everybody really likes, and he is so incredibly talented. And you come across some of these athletes, you know, especially in my time, where you have guys that are so good and could have had great careers had it not been for injuries. And for whatever reason, it's just they can't escape it, right? And so for Paxton, we're all hoping that the fact that he's on the 10-day IL with his left forearm, that it is just a strain, that the MRI comes back negative in terms of any structural damage, any severe damage that he has sustained to that left forearm, that elbow area, and that he's able to get back in pitching relatively soon. But yeah, I mean, this is your worst nightmare if you're a Mariners fan or you're someone that was banking on James Paxton really kind of solidifying your starting rotation. 24 pitches in, and Man, you were disproven really, really quick of that notion.
It's a bummer. Shannon Dreyer, Mariners insider, obviously for us, 710 ESPN, says that Nick Margavicius will take his spot in the lineup, in the rotation. That's not shocking. It was him and Dunn that were fighting for that final spot. Dunn ends up getting it, and in the meantime, you get Margavicius as a long reliever. Obviously, with him out of the bullpen now and in the rotation, you got to look for a replacement there. So you have just some kind of moves that continue to affect them. So obviously going to be looking for someone in the bullpen. But man, do either of you guys think that this, here's why I'm framing this question. The injury to Paxton is a huge bummer because he's a guy that's really easy to root for and looked great in spring. And you wanted him to have the second stint where he came in and there weren't injuries that were sidelining his year. And he was able to be as good as we all know he can be.
Yep.
I guess I am still looking at the young core they're working around, thinking like that's where my focus is mostly bent. So for instance, our conversation about Evan White, that to me is one that I'm even more concerned about than with Paxton, who, and maybe it's because he's on the 10-day IL, I'm just assuming is going to be okay.
Well, I don't know if you can fully say that. They're putting him on the 10-day IL with the idea of, hey, if he is okay, if everything's fine, then we'll just put him off of it. But this is a way for them to, you know, put him on ice. They're able to make the roster moves necessary to replace him. But, it all depends on the MRI that he gets back here relatively soon. And the reality is, though, with James Paxton, this wasn't a move that James Paxton was going to be a part of your future. What you were hoping is this is going to be the best of both worlds. This was going to be a clean, easy transaction. James Paxton comes in. He performs well. He shows the rest of Major League Baseball. He's healthy, ready to go, ready to help some contender out there. And the Mariners can benefit off of that by getting some, you know, young prospect or get a reliever of some kind, a player that can help your club of the future. And this kind of puts a wrench into that plan, at least to the foreseeable future. So we'll see what that ends up coming to be. But then you also have, you know, Jake Fraley that gets hurt. They're going to bring up Braden Bishop. This puts you in a spot where you obviously don't want to see them bring up Gilbert or Kelnick, because if you're committed, you've already made this decision. We are putting them down for development's sake. You don't all of a sudden turn that right around and say, no, we're going to put the development aspect on the back burner and we're going to bring these guys up right away and risk their future just to be able to fulfill, you know, the missing bodies and put up the, you know, quote unquote, next best up. This isn't about that. This is about long-term future, having your eye on the prize long-term and not really focusing on, you know, what it's going to mean for you here in the month of April. And so people still need to stay patient, still need to, you know, think with that lens. These guys will be up, but I just have to imagine that it's going to be more like the end of May than anything else.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Justin Dunn gets his first start of the year for the Mariners in their series finale against the Chicago White Sox. M's trying to avoid a sweep here. Dallas Keuchel will get the start for Chicago. Pre-game show coming up in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. First pitch is at 1:10 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. What do each of you really want to see in this finale today? What redeems this finale? The series itself is lost.
Now, Stacey, we have a hard out coming up.
I know. Don't make me nervous. I still have a minute.
I want to see you nail this hard out,
Stacey. I'm going to get it done. So what do you want to see?
What I want to see is I want to see this offense put it together. And it's going to be a long haul. It's going to be a process. But what we have seen outside of Mitch Haniger and Ty France, my guy, who keeps, you
Jake's
know,
guy, Ty.
Raking. But outside of that, this lineup has struggled mightily. And we talk about controlling the zone and all those types of things that service has preached. Well, the past two outings against the White Sox, you have seen an obscene amount of strikeouts. I would like to see that change. I would like to see contact. I would like to see ball put in play. Let's get this thing turned around.
Good thing for today's matchup, Dallas Keuchel, not historically known as a strikeout pitcher, so maybe those numbers go down a little
goodness.
Bit. But, yeah.
Let's put the ball in play.
Would love to see it. Would love to see it. A little more offense today. All right.
Talking
this has
to you,
been
Evan White.
Jake and Stacey. Do not go anywhere. Mariners pregame show comes up next for the series finale against the Chicago White Sox right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.